The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Monday, June 2, 2008. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, the CFTC reportedly is investigating cotton futures. The UN will take up the food versus fuel debate on Tuesday, and those opposing U.S. beef trade in South Korea are going to the courts. We'll have these and other stories this half hour, and the folks from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will give us the latest on conditions across the corn and soybean belts. It's all on the Monday edition of your Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580, a broadcasting service of the College of Media at the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Monday afternoon, settlements looked like this. In Kansas City, July wheat, 821 up 19, September 835 up 19. July wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 782.5 up 21, September 798.75 up 21.25, December 820.25 up 21. July corn, 615.75 up 16.5, September 629 up 16.5, December 643.25 up 16.75, March of 2009, 657.25 up 17.25. July beans, 1365.5 up 2, August 1370.75 up 2, September 1361 up 4.75, November 1358.5 up 4. July soybean meal 343 up 150, July soybean oil 6170 up 39. June live cattle 9540 down 112.5. August feeders 11370 down 232.5. June lean hogs 7632.5 down 142.5 points. And those are the settlement prices from Monday from Kansas City and Chicago. Let's go ahead and look at the outside markets for you. July crude oil, 127.70 there, up 35 cents. The August contract is up 155 at 129.05. June ethanol, 240.5, up 1.4. July, 240, up 2/10 of a cent. July natural gas at 11.98 is up 27.7. The July RBOB at 338.47 is up 365. July heating oil, 371.88, up 521. And July propane is at 169.95, unchanged. The silver contract for July settled at 16.91, up 4.5 cents. And the gold contract for August had a settlement of 8.97, up $5.50 on the day. The U.S. dollar trading at 72.97, up almost 5 cents. The S&P 500 at 1381.47 is off 18.91. Taking a look at Ed Kieser's two-state forecast tonight, he says in the north and central sections, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms during the evening hours and widespread rain and thunderstorms after midnight. Locally, heavy rain is likely. In the south, partly to mostly cloudy with a few scattered showers and thunderstorms. Lows ranging from 58 in the far north to around 70 degrees in the south. Tomorrow, in the north and central sections, mostly cloudy with periods of rain and thunderstorms. In the south, partly sunny with scattered thunderstorms and highs ranging from 65 along the Chicago lakefront to 92 degrees in southwestern Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, it looks like strength all along the corn, soybean, and wheat pits at the Chicago Board of Trade, although I would imagine the fundamental reasons are probably slightly different from each crop.
Well, we saw several reasons for the market being higher, but the initial calls weren't quite as optimistic as what we're seeing here on the close. Commodity funds were fairly decent buyers. They estimated bought over 16,000 contracts of corn, 8,000 contracts of wheat, maybe up to over 5,000 contracts of beans on the day. There's some even commercial buying in there, so I wouldn't be surprised to see some sales being announced here as we go through the week. We did see Egypt step up and buy 120,000 corn, and there's some world wheat business taking place. So, fundamentally, we'll continue to watch what's going on the corn and bean sector because it is the most dynamic market to be trading this time of year over the next 2 months in general. We'll have a lot more news at 3 o'clock this afternoon when we look at the conditions report, plans report, and the trade will sort of open up this evening according to what those numbers have to show.
Let's take the commodities one at a time. Let's begin in the soybeans, which really finished quite off of its highs for the day, Kurt.
They closed 10, 11 cents off their highs. Old days, back when that was huge. But today, I don't know if that really matters anymore. We got to expect 50, 75 cent swings in the bean complex for no reason at all. But from a technical point of view, it's going to be important for beans to carve out a new high this week because when you do look at a price chart, we could be establishing sort of a head and shoulders top formation here. So it's going to be important for November beans to get above 1375 here by mid-late week to sort of negate the technical formation that's being formed here. Cycle-wise, we've got some cycle lows due here and due to get something going, but we just need the fundamental support to get up and out of here, whether it's a strike in Argentina or continued wet weather or whatever it may be. The bean market needs help here fairly quickly.
Can the beans rally to break that head and shoulders top formation without some outside help? For example, the yen rising against the dollar or another rally in the crude oil pit?
It could be influenced by the outside markets. Everyone's seen the studies between the bean chart and the crude oil chart. If not, we can email you one. But there's similar there. Same thing on the dollar. The strength or weakness of the dollar is going to be a main event. About the only thing to throw a curveball at us would be if the talks taking place this week on these funds produces something bearish where they would limit or change the status of the funds or where they would be actually having to liquidate some of their longs. They remain huge longs. That would throw a curveball. At the same point there, if there's not going to be anything come out of these meetings and we start making new highs, well, they'll naturally buy because the computer programs they follow as the trend moves higher, keeps them in a buying mode. So there's a lot of things to watch, and this news can change about every half hour. We feel the bull and the bear are both going to be right here for a while. We feel this market's going to be up and it's going to be down. And, the whole trick is, not getting bearish on the breaks, not getting too bullish on the rallies. But here in the next 2 or 3 weeks, if this weather doesn't cooperate, that's going to be the determining factor. We've heard stories of some of these larger houses seeing the corn and bean price doubling here in the next few months if this weather really gets nasty.
This is a week that producers had to make decisions about preventive planting or not. What are you hearing about the replant, and are you picking up any signs of what the preventive plant might look like?
Not so much on the preventive planting there. We'll see how that unfolds here over the next week or so. But A lot of the guys we work with are seed dealers themselves. You know, just about everybody, you know, has something extra to do with seed. And there's been a lot of movement of seed, you know, where's more corn to the south or beans, trying to get a hold of beans, no beans around. You know, everybody's got a story to tell there. We'll see what the USDA says this afternoon, but the areas of mainly a concern is, of course, the southern part of Illinois and Ohio, Indiana, and not too far, just Ford County in particular. They've really been bombarded there. So there's some localized areas around here that's just been behind the gun on trying to get the crop in too wet weather. Some of this ground just can't handle it, and that's going to be a problem here if we continue to see rain the rest of the week.
Any chance the cash market will help the futures?
Well, it's going to be two types of different markets. The cash market did help the bean market here recently because bean basis firmed up quite a bit, and that did generate some commercial buying in the bean pit. But we're going to have to keep the two separate here for a while. The funds are going to dictate the futures according to their buy and sell programs kicking in. And whereas the cash market is going to reflect more of the fundamental outlook. And so you're going to have the two sort of batting heads or button heads here for a while. And it's going to create opportunities in the basis in our marketing. So one needs to keep a close eye on that over the next 2 months.
The trade in the corn pit today probably reflects ideas that this afternoon NASS is going to release corn ratings in the good to excellent category for something under last year's first rating of the year, which was in the 70s. If we get to something under 60, did the rally today cover that, or does that mean more upside potential?
Well, a lot of the news was 51%, and that was in, 96, I believe. And if I would say 55 or lower would be bullish. That would extend today's rally. 55 or higher, I would assume that the trade pretty well has built that number in. Now, probably what will be more important, what will be more of a read on the whole thing, would be the overnight advisory services and what they feel the bottom line will be on the supply-demand balance sheet, because a lot of these guys do have computer programs where they'll plug in the good to excellent readings, and that sort of gives them an idea where yield's at. And of course, yield moves the bottom line of the balance sheet more than anything. But you got to remember, this good to excellent, harvest progress, planting progress, that's all a visual observation. What you might think it would be, I might think it'd be different. So, but that's the only thing we've got to go on, and that will be newsworthy for the short term.
Certainly something that will get traded, right, Kurt?
Yeah, and it is serious in some areas, don't get me wrong. You know, if the corn crop comes out 70% good to excellent, there are some areas that's 0% good to excellent.
Thank you much, Kurt.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And Kurt joins us every Monday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from the Archer Daniels Midland Company, ADM, resourceful by nature.
In agricultural news, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that the CFTC has launched an investigation into potential irregularities in cotton futures. The cotton investigation reportedly involves a dramatic spike in cotton future prices in March, followed by a drop. People familiar with the investigation say the CFTC has sent subpoenas to a variety of cotton market traders. That follows on the heels of a CFTC announcement last week of a wide-ranging investigation into crude oil futures. Randy Gordon is a spokesperson with the National Grain and Feed Association.
One of the things we've asked the CFTC to do is to put a moratorium on the speculative or the hedge exemption that these funds have that allows them to control unlimited amounts of futures contracts and let the market kind of settle down a little bit. So we're still hopeful that they'll take some action on that front as well, which would be a bit of an addition to what they've announced on the energy side.
Gordon says index funds and hedge funds need to be reclassified as commercial traders. Index and hedge funds have no trading limits. The UN on Tuesday will take up the food versus fuel debate at a World Food Security Summit. The meeting is expected to provide insight on the range of policy options being considered by UN member nations regarding biofuels, export embargoes, tariffs, and other trade measures. And in July, leaders of the G8 will consider rising food prices. German Chancellor Angela Merkel says she will ask G8 nations to address the issue and to coordinate their efforts to combat rising food costs. G8 nations include the U.S., Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, Russia, and the United Kingdom. World Bank President Robert Zoellick is calling on the U.S. and European Union to ease subsidies on biofuels. Zoellick says the food crisis is a man-made disaster. Some analysts are suggesting that food prices could climb by 9% a year through 2012. Stuart Doan has more.
Bill Lapp of Advanced Economic Solutions foresees average corn prices of $5.25 a bushel through 2012, with wheat around $6.50 and soybeans near $11.
When I do that analysis and look at the relationship between that and food prices, I get a 2008 through 2012 average annual rate of increase in the consumer price index for food of 9.0%.
A 9% increase in the cost of food would be the largest since 11% in 1979. Lapp participated in a media briefing sponsored by the Environmental Working Group. According to USDA, food prices rose by 4% during 2007 and are forecast to increase 5% this year. Stuart Doan, Washington.
Meteorologists at DTN say about 5% of the U.S. corn crop has been adversely affected by spring weather. That could result in a 4 million acre loss in corn. At last year's yield of 151 bushels to the acre, that translates into a potential production loss of about 650 million bushels. The most problematic area in the Corn Belt is an arc from central southeast Missouri through southern Illinois and Indiana into Ohio. Meanwhile, climatologists in Nebraska are suggesting delayed corn plantings could have adverse effects this fall. Al Dutcher is Nebraska State climatologist.
It is going to take nearly perfect weather from this point forward to recover from all of these problems we've had, and that's not even looking at what possible acreage we may have lost with these recent rain events in terms of the amount of corn acreage that might have been lost and may not even be able to be replanted at this point in time.
USDA will release its first corn crop ratings of the season later this afternoon. Opponents to opening U.S. beef trade with South Korea say they will ask a court to block the move. Three main opposition parties say they will ask South Korea's constitutional court to rule that U.S. beef violates the people's right to health and to issue an injunction stopping trade until it issues a verdict. USDA says few producers are breaking their Conservation Reserve Program contracts despite high grain prices. USDA says this fiscal year, just over 131,000 acres of the 36.4 million acres in the CRP were bought out to put into farmland. Breaking of a CRP contract requires that landowners repay with interest all money received for the idled land, plus a penalty fee equal to 25% of 1 year's rent. And the 7th Federal Reserve District of Chicago reports that the district's farmland cash rental rates soared 21% this year compared with those of 2007. But the year-over-year increase in district farmland values eased to 14% in the first quarter of 2008, and the quarterly increase in the value of good agricultural land was 2%. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Joining us now with our cash grain analysis is Brian Stark of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Brian.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Anderson's do a lot of business in Indiana and Ohio, and as you heard in the news report, those are areas that are among the most problematic for corn plantings. What are you hearing from your sources out that way?
Well, I think that there's areas in the southern part of those two states, along with southern Illinois, that have saw a lot of replanting, two, maybe even the third time now working on trying to get corn in the ground. The preventative planting date for crop insurance is June 5th. We're approaching that very quickly. At some point, they may be just looking to collect on that insurance if the weather doesn't permit with the forecast throwing a chance of rain every day this week. But it definitely is a concern. People start to talk, I hear every day of, well, it's just a few acres here and a few acres there in each state. Well, as soon as you start saying that, those acres add up. And I think that the acreage issue could be very interesting come the end of June with the USDA reports.
And I wonder if you could have as many as, I'm just throwing a number out there, 300,000 to 500,000 acres of preventive planting or not.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty realistic. I think overall nationwide, I wouldn't be surprised if the number, you know, you lose up to a million acres in some spots with the way how wet the spring's been. So it's definitely a cause for concern when we've cut acreage to begin with. On top of that, now we're looking at potentially losing some because of the wet spring.
On the other hand, I imagine producers have locked the lock pretty tight on their bins, particularly in the corn, waiting for prices to rally to contract highs?
Well, I think that's an easy statement to think about, Dave, because you look forward and you see how rough of a start we've got off. It's not ideal. It's critical that we had a normal growing year. We didn't get the good start we were hoping for. We may still turn out to be okay, but yeah, they're tight holders of their corn and bean crops at this point, waiting to see how we head forward through pollination. And at this point, I don't see why anybody would be willing to be nervous of a big downside correction until we get to those critical growing stages.
Meanwhile, the wheat harvest is just around the corner. In your operation, how much wheat do you take in typically?
Generally, the last couple of years, about 2 million bushels. Could be a little bit more than that this year. I guess it just depends on the space logistics, but we're looking to see about at least that again this year.
Are you finding it easy or difficult at this time to put corn and beans in the pipeline?
I think right now it's, like I said before, there's such a tight holder of grain at this point that, you know, the basis may try and search from a processor point of view, but right now you're chasing grain that just doesn't want to be sold. And I think eventually they'll cut loose some of that once we get towards the July. But at this point, movement's going to remain slow here the next couple of months.
I guess I was talking about commercial grain that you own.
Oh, that we own, yes. You know, I think at this point, you know, the carry's still pretty decent going forward, but we're trying to liquidate ownership as we move forward, especially on beans.
And go ahead and give us your prices for today.
Cash corn $5.93, fall corn is $6.03, cash soybeans $13.47, fall beans $12.78.
Are there any other issues that you think that we should touch upon today before we let you go?
No, I think everybody just needs to point towards the ratings this afternoon. I think those will tell the tale of what's been going on in the Corn Belt and see exactly how tough of a spring it's been with the good to excellent ratings, and we'll see where the market looks at them from here.
In your opinion, what number pops the market?
I think anything below 60 is going to be awfully friendly from a good to excellent point of view. But just take a grain of salt. What do you call 4 to 6 inch, you know, tall corn? So that may be something else the trade looks at. Maybe see how we progress over the next couple of weeks before we get really antsy.
Thank you much, Brian.
Thanks, Dave.
Brian Stark of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Someone from the Andersons joins us every Monday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report. It's National Hazelnut Cake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1857, a farmer, James Gibbs of Mill Point, Virginia, invented the first practical U.S. chain stitch sewing machine. It went for $50, half the price of anything similar of the day. In 1886, U.S. President Grover Cleveland married Frances Folsom, with a ceremony taking place in the White House. Cleveland is the only president to be married in the White House. In 1928, Velveeta cheese was created by Kraft. It was packaged in a tin foil lined wooden box. When melted, it was smooth as velvet, hence the name. By the way, Kraft's first factory was in Stockton, Illinois in 1914. In 1943, John Frank Stevens died. Stevens, an American civil engineer, was in charge of the Panama Canal project from 1905 to 1907. He planned the major features of the waterway and lobbied openly for a high-level type lock canal, which was realized with the president's signature in 1906. And in 2003, the USDA declared that frozen, batter-coated French fries are fresh vegetables. And a year later, a federal judge agreed, saying the term fresh vegetables was ambiguous. By the way, USDA had unsuccessfully tried in 1981 to classify ketchup and pickle relish as vegetables. Public protest caused them to drop the idea. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is Josh Dar of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Josh.
Hey, Dave. How are you doing?
I am doing well. It looks like we received a lot of rain across the Corn Belt over the weekend. It doesn't appear that the week is going to start out all that good, especially if you're in Nebraska and Wisconsin, northern Illinois, and Michigan, those kind of places.
Yeah, and eastern Iowa, too. And we just continue to see a parade of systems every 3 to 4 days come across the Corn Belt here, and the rainfall totals generally half an inch to 2 inch on average, but you're getting some widespread amounts well north of 2 inches. And you look at the Iowa event from late last week where you saw 2 to 4 inches widespread across the state. And these systems, it's really driven by the ridge of high pressure down south with very warm temps across the southern tier of the U.S. And these convective systems, the organized convective systems, are moving over the top of the ridge, which right now happens to be square across the Midwest, Nebraska, Kansas, all the way through to Illinois, and then coming down through portions of the Delta region. So that's pretty much the status quo here for probably the better half of the next 2 weeks. Every 3 to 4 days, pretty good producing rain systems moving across the belt.
I guess the good news is, though, temperatures will be more seasonal, so maybe we'll get some net drying?
Well, yeah, that's a great point. We have seen this persistent trend of cooler than normal temperatures across most of the Northwest, most notably the northern portions of the Midwest. And that ridge of high pressure at times will bring warmth further north than what we've seen over the past 4 weeks. So, yeah, there are between these rain vents, we will see drying and we will see warmer temperatures, but I guess which one wins out the battle, our view here is over the next 2 weeks, still the rain events and the amount of rainfall that's occurring wins the battle versus net drying and evaporation in between the events.
You see anything in your research that would suggest we're going to change trend from this wet spring that we've had to something approaching more normal conditions into the summer?
I think as you get towards the back half of June, and this southern ridge has been a pretty persistent feature at times through the spring, and it's really set up now across Texas, and it moves west-east a little bit at times, but it's really a southern U.S. feature. Over the back half of June and maybe even to July, it's hard to tell when it would happen, but that ridge will more than likely not move north. Now, whether that's over the Midwest or over the Rockies or over, say, eastern portions of the Midwest, that's difficult to tell at this point. But we think it is coming north at some point, which would give you drier, but then you have to worry about the warmth and the heat wild card. So,
turn your attention to world weather, where in Australia we're looking for some showers and thunderstorms in New South Wales, northern parts of Western Australia. Are they in line for some moisture?
They are, indeed. Over the weekend, Queensland saw their biggest rain event of the past, say, two and a half months. They saw widespread half-inch-to-inch totals across the wheat belt. That event is sliding to the southeast and will cover most of New South Wales over the next 36 hours. That's, you know, given the dryness that has been entrenched in that part of Australia for the past several months, that's a big deal for the wheat farmers there to be able to get in the ground and start planting. Western Australia, you have to wait another week till a frontal passage, and we'll see how that comes to fruition. But right now, it looks like it could be a pretty good event a week from today in Western Australia.
Thanks, Josh.
All right, thanks, Dave.
Josh Dar of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. And that's today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.